With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hello, welcome to the At The Hive podcast, part of the SB Nation network of podcasts. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere else where you normally find your podcast, listen to your
podcast.
Yes. I'm busy. I'm talking. I'm Jonathan, and I hate the Miami Heat. Zach.
My name is Zachary Brown. I'm from Cafe Content, and I am stoked that we are tied at halftime. We're recording this podcast at halftime of what would you say, Jonathan, the most important game of the season?
Yeah, I guess. It is. But it seems like every game has been the most important game of the season. It's like a rolling most important game of the season. Like Friday's game against the Wizards was the most important game of the season to that point.
Until we played the Heat, right. And if we beat the Heat this game, we're going to – now correct me if I'm wrong, Jonathan, because I'm usually wrong. We're going to replace the Heat with the 8th seed, right? Do we skip over the Magic if we win this game?
Yeah, we're tied with the Magic right now. So we would be tied with the Heat. I don't know what the tiebreaker is because I think we're 2-2. We'd be 2-2 against each other, right?
Okay. Yeah, so we're just going to assume we're in the playoffs.
We'll at least be tied for the 8th seed in the playoffs if we win this game. And by the time everybody's listening to this, they'll already have known if we won this game or not. But starting off with what we've seen so far in the first half, these games suck.
They're sloppy. I understand that. There's a lot of missed shots, but they seem scrappy towards each other. There seems like there's a lot of like energy and animosity between them. You don't see that.
I don't know what it is, but other than when LeBron was there and they just ran us off the court every game, it seems like every game against the Heat or the majority of the games against the Heat are these ugly games where it's like neither team makes it to 100. The final score is 97-88, and it's just – and both teams shoot under 40% from the field.
Marvin Williams with, I think I counted, 2 air balls?
Yeah, he has 2 air balls so far.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, it's been ugly. Jeremy Lamb and Tony Parker to this point have 24 of the 39 points. So good for them. Battle on everybody
Jeremy
else.
Jeremy Lamb has been playing really well, and the Heat have been doing this thing, and they've done it before where they trap Kemba like super early. Mm-hmm. They even play kind of press on him, trap him super early and get him to pass the ball. And their traps have been working early on. A few times he's had turnovers off those traps.
Yeah. And hopefully the Hornets adjust. Cause that's transitioning. Cause that's what the Rockets did in the second half on Monday. And it seemed like part of it was probably because they were like, we got this game in the bag. It's okay. But when they started trying to do that, that seemed kind of when the Hornets really started to find their groove offensively.
Yeah, we got another hum diddly D from Eric Collins. Let me tell you something. Eric Collins reminds me of the uncle in Thanksgiving when he tells you the joke that you don't really laugh at, but he thinks maybe you didn't hear him, so he repeats himself. Hum diddly D.
but he actually made me laugh though. He's so funny.
Yeah. I like we were talking about before. I like it though, what he brings to the announcing.
So while we're at halftime, I want to talk about the Rockets game real quick. Cool. A lot of people have been asking, wishing the Hornets would play young guys
play their young
favor
players.
Of the vets. Yeah, like Dwayne Bacon and Malik Monk Billy, Hernan Gomez, less Nick Batum and Marvin Williams. They got their wish with Batum, Williams, and Zeller all out with injuries, along with MKG and Tony Parker. And boy, did that go poorly.
Yeah.
They looked better in the second half, but I really – part of it was, like, not to take away from them completely. Like the Hornets did play better in the second half, but there was definitely a sense that the Rockets had figured they already won that game. But the beginning of that game, that was not good.
Right, and I saw that too on the thread of the game that they were asking for the young players to be played more. But so Bridges has been playing more, Bacon has been playing more. The only two players who don't see a lot of minutes are Monk and Billy, and they just don't play good basketball, Jonathan.
No,
you can't play players who don't play good basketball. That's just, you know.
I see the appeal with Billy because he's got good touch around the basket. And he's a good rebounder, but offensively he's not reliable enough on like the catch, like catching passes out of pick and rolls and stuff. He bobbles a lot of passes, he gets stripped a lot. And defensively, he's just him and then Malik. This goes from Malik Monk too. They're just non-factors on the defensive end completely.
And so, yeah, like, not only non-factors, just like open gates.
Yeah, yeah. Billy is heavy-footed to the extreme, and he compounds that by being somewhat apathetic with towards help defense for reasons I can't understand. I don't know if it's effort or bad technique or what, just cannot stay in front of anybody despite being very nimble and athletic.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what it is specifically with the Rockets game with those starters being out. What I also heard a lot of criticism of JB and how he was coaching the team and the decisions he was making. And if you're going to have players out for injury in this schedule of games, you want them to be out for the West Coast games so that they can play in these important, crucial games.
Yeah, the games we're going to lose anyway.
Right, exactly.
Like, it's okay to miss the Rockets game because we're going to lose to the Rockets anyway. All you're doing is making us lose by more, which doesn't...
Right, we want them to be healthy for the Wizards and the Heat.
Yeah. With that, with the young guys, Miles played pretty well, but I think a lot of his numbers came in garbage time. Bacon too, I think, but they had their moments. Bacon, he looks like a totally different player since he's been back from all the G League stints. But like we talked about with Billy and Malik, who haven't been getting minutes, much to the chagrin of a lot of Hornets fans, I think they proved why they're not getting minutes. Like Malik Monk was a plus one, which is the only positive plus minus, but I think that's more of a coincidence because he was 3 for 12 from the field, 2 for 9 from three.
2 for 9 from three. He was just inaccurate and not making the right decisions again.
Yeah. I don't know how he doesn't turn the ball over more. Like, he has like a 1-to-1 assist to turnover ratio, which isn't great, but I swear he gets like 5 passes deflected a game that just somehow end up back in teammates' hands.
Yeah. And you mentioned that they played better in the second half and, you know, they looked a little better in the second half. Really, what happened was, Walker just decided to turn it on and carry the team to his 40 point.
Yeah, corners. 40 points and 20 shots. That should be enough.
Perfect at least from the 3-point line.
Yeah, just like to still lose
one
by
of
12,
those.
I think. Yeah, I think he kind
yeah,
of
which
like,
can.
We keep talking about that.
No, you're fine. I'm sorry. It feeds the fire that you know he's doing all that he can do to win these games, and it just the starters mentioned that like, hey, after this 40-point performance where we drop one to the Rockets, like how can you ask Kemba to come back to a team like this? Now I'm asking him to. it's just hard.
Yeah. Yes, it is. And then like in the defense of the team, they were down. He was the only starter. Well, I guess Miles is a starter too, but he was only of the regular starters, two of the regular starters to play. So it's not like the normal team, but I do think he covered up how bad most of the rest of the team played. Cause it's like, oh look, all the young guys got thrown to the wolves against the hottest team in the league. And we kept it relatively close. It's like, well, the wall was the 90% of the reason for that being the case. It was a coincidence, if you know what I mean, that it happened to come in the game where the young guys are playing. And I also might think he probably went into that game. He won't admit it, but with nothing to lose, like, we have very little chance in this. And I think that probably helped him play a little freer, helped him play a little better.
Sure, and a lot, like you said, a lot of that time was in garbage time when we got that lead back a little bit. And Houston is just in a different stage in their franchise than we are, right? This is the this is a do or die year for Houston. In, next year in 2021, they'll be paying Paul, Harden, and Capella about $100 million of the 104 projected cap for next year. So, like, this is, they're going for the championship this year. So when you lose a game like this, I know people are frustrated. This is a scheduled loss.
Yeah, this is that. So moving to a game, another, the next game, the Wizards. I wish we could beat the Wizards more convincingly, because I feel like we should be a better team than the Wizards.
And we were for most, we had a 20 plus point lead twice. We outplayed them for the majority of the game and then did the thing that we always do, allowed them to creep back in at the end.
Yeah. And it never got like
too close.
Yeah. It was never like, oh no, you know, this, we could lose this game. I mean, there's always the Hornets are always capable of losing a game in the fourth quarter, but it was never like a, I don't think it ever got to where the Hornets, the Wizards had the ball with a chance to take the lead. But the Hornets got outscored 32-21 in the fourth quarter, and it's just, it's always the beginning of these fourth quarters where stuff just seems to always go poorly.
Yeah, I agree. And they did the thing to Beal that I was really hoping they'd do to Giannis when they played the Bucks. Is that they let Beal go. That they let Beal score his points. Beal hit 40 just like Kemba did in the Rockets game, but they held everyone else in check. I was getting frustrated that Bradley Beal was so wide open at the three-point line a few times. But if you're going to let their star player just score all the points, let them do it and take everybody else out of the equation, which is what happened and why we won.
Yeah, and Bradley Beal's a great player, but he's not going to win games by himself.
Not James Harden, right?
Yeah, it's not like, like James Harden, you're like, oh, we'll let James Harden get his and we'll stop everybody else. Well, like, that's what the Rockets want you to do, because he's the only one. That he, like, him getting his is most of their offense, especially when Paul's not playing. But yeah, Bradley Beal is. Yeah, Bradley Beal getting 40 is okay, especially in the he played 45 minutes, so he got some extra minutes to kind of boost that a little bit.
And everyone else, the role players on the Hornets, did their job. Lamb was great in the Wizards game. Even Batum was had 16 points in the Wizards game. But I don't want to blanket over Kemba. Kemba was, I know he didn't score 40 points like he did in the Rockets game, but he was magical, especially in the paint. He reminds me a little bit of Steve Nash. I don't know if you see that, where he attacks in on unorthodox angles, kind of contorts his body to make shots, hit shots over big men. It's so fun to watch when he does that.
Yeah, he's it's such a stark contrast to what he was like as a young player, where he would just go full speed and just kind of throw it in the basket. And now he never, he always seems to be going at like half speed, but like you said, manipulating angles and stuff to get where he needs to go.
Yeah. Do you think that Bacon, like, maybe if he allows himself to go a little half speed, because Bacon's always, you know, 100% all out every time, that will help him evolve his game as he gets a little more experience?
You talking about Dwayne Bacon?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And he shows a good touch around the basket, and I'm happy that, like, since he's been back in the rotation, he's not shooting very many of those 20-foot, you know, off-the-dribble pull-ups. He's either shooting... If he doesn't shoot on the catch, he goes all the way to the basket, and he shows a good touch around the basket. So I do think if he matures and he keeps developing, if he kind of learns that Kemba, you know, slow down, speed up, you know, change directions while attacking, I think he can become a very good finisher, because he definitely has the touch for it. He's not slamming shots off the backboard or anything.
Right. And like you said, we should beat a team like the Wizards. We did beat them, not as convincing as we would want them to. But you saw the performance, especially there were times in that game when we had that game in hand. We were comfortable with how we were playing. They couldn't force us out of our game plan, which happens a lot, especially when they trap Kemba.
Yeah.
So it was, I thought it was really well played. And if we're going to win games, that's how we're going to win games.
Yeah, and that's what it was nice to see, because like you said, it's very easy to kind of sabotage the Hornets' offense by trapping Kemba because no one else can really create anything by themselves. Like, Nick is a good passer, and he finds the right teammate. He finds the open shooters, but he's not going to draw any help. He's too slow with the ball. So if Kimba's not creating, and I think that's why this team is so bad when Kemba sits, because no one else can really
be a
put pressure on the defense. Yeah, nobody else, like, either for themselves or for others. Like I said, Nick is a good playmaker for others in the sense that he'll find the right guy, but he's not going to draw help and kick it out. He's not going to create, find the openings that are there. And Jeremy Lamb's the closest we have to someone who could create shots for himself, and he's been great lately, and that's part of the reason why we beat the Wizards, like you said. So we need more of that if we're going to make the playoffs.
And Jeremy Lamb has the potential, especially I think in the coming years, to become that playmaker that you can really rely on. He's been doing really well since JV put him on the bench, being that kind of fire coming off the bench.
Yeah,
I wonder what they're going to do in the playoffs when we make the playoffs. Yeah, I said when. With him, with his role going forward.
Yeah, and they showed it earlier in the broadcast of this Heat game that he actually has played a smidge more minutes per game off the bench than he did as a starter. It just we just kind of shifted when he gets his minutes. And
he's ending the games too, right?
Yeah.
So he's out on the court when these games are ending, which in my opinion is more important. I know the prestige comes with starting a game, but I want to be on the court when the game is on the line.
Yeah, there's no, you know, there's games played and games started and that stuff, and there's no stat for games finished. But I think, you know, in basketball terms, it is more important to finish the game. Jeremy Lamb's stats. He's roughly 29 minutes per game as a starter and as a reserve. As a starter, 15 points, 5.5 rebounds, 2 assists. Off the bench, 15.7 points, 6 rebounds, and 3 assists. So everything's up off the bench in roughly the same amount of playing time.
And you would expect that, A, because Jeremy Lamb's a playmaker, but B, because the talent that he's going against is a little less, right? So
yeah.
you're gonna hit some starters in that second wave coming off the bench, but mostly they're going to be the opposing team's bench players.
Yeah, and he comes in relatively early, but for the most part, yeah, like when Jeremy Lamb comes in, that reserve, so he's got a little bit softer of a group to attack. This game, we're about 3 minutes into the third quarter now, and neither team still. It's so ugly.
It is. It's just messy. But they, like I said, all the players seem to have energy. They seem to be really aggressive, going for the ball. A couple times there have been rebounds where you see 2-3 people on the floor.
Yeah.
Parker has been doing this thing all game, where he is attacking the basket so much that he goes flying into the first row.
You know, one other thing I wanted to mention. Frank Kaminsky's done a real good job boxing out Hassan Whiteside on the defensive glass, on the Heat's offensive glass. The Heat have rebounds right now, but most of that seemed to have come when the starters were in.
Gotcha. What I've noticed from Frank, and like, I shoot the shot, Frank, is what I always scream at my television because he's open at the 3-point line. And a lot of times he wants to back them up. He wants to get in the post. I understand you're more comfortable with that, but we've talked about it before. It's 2019. We need you to score. You're 40%, 39% from the 3-point line. Shoot the shot, Frank. Do me a favor.
Yeah, he's taking 3 shots in 12 minutes right now. Only 1-3, and he missed it, which fine for him because everybody else is missing their threes. Like, the teams combined are 8 for 40 from 3 right now.
Eric Collins was talking about how it reminds him of 90s basketball, and Dell was like, yeah, except they're taking, like you said, 43s. So it's actually nothing like 90s basketball
here. it's a lot like 90s basketball in that the teams are missing a lot of shots and playing slow. It just where, ooh, that was a good shot. It's just where the shots are coming from is drastically different.
Yeah, I assume you saw the Lamb 3-pointer from like 40 feet back.
Yeah, that he banked it in.
Yeah.
like Eric Collins said, he got a grenade, or Del Coyer said he got a grenade with the pin pulled. Like, the pin had been pulled and weighted and then thrown to Jeremy Lamb.
All right, so while we're watching the action fold out in front of us, I want to ask you about the next week's coming games real quick. Just give me a real quick win-loss, what you think. So we got Philadelphia at home on Tuesday, 7 p.m. Do you think, first of all, do you think Cody is coming back after this game?
I have no idea, because it's just soreness, and soreness, like, he's missed a long time with soreness before, but it also could be, like, it's one of those literally day-to-day, so I have no idea, because I haven't seen anything in the last couple days about what the team thinks the status is. Have you?
No, I haven't. It doesn't seem like it's a something that'll take him out for weeks, though.
No, I hope not.
The good thing about the 76ers is that they're not a three-point heavy team like the Bucks are. You know, they get their points from distributing the ball and from Embiid owning everybody in the league. So I think that you approach that in the same way, which is you let Embiid get his points, you let him own the paint, but then you have to allow Kemba to hit from three and hope that the role players show up. I mean, obviously, you know, they're have a better record. Their organization is a little more looking towards going deep in the playoffs. But I think at home, it's possible for us to win that game.
I do think it's possible. And it helps that we're 0-3 against the 76ers, but we've lost by 1, 2, and 3 points in the three games. So, and I know that was pre-Tobias Harris, so that changes things. But
the 76ers team is Frankenstein.
Yeah, it is.
Like, from the beginning of the season to now, just a totally different team. I think that they're probably better. I like Covington as a defensive player.
I do too.
I hate that they lost that. But you're facing a different team, is I guess what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I feel like we match up well with them, because, like you said, they're not super three-point heavy. Like, all of their three-point shooting comes from guys like a three-point shooter, but mostly they kind of depend on role players for outside shooting, and the rest of their damage is done with Embiid and Simmons in the paint. If we keep Embiid off the glass, which is obviously not a given by any means with this team, I think we have a decent chance. Because, like I said, based on what we saw earlier this year, it just seems like we match up well against this team, even with their new acquisitions.
Yeah, and it's all about desire. The Hornets are scrapping for a place in the playoffs right now. Mm-hmm. They should come to that game, that Tuesday game at 7 o'clock. Maybe we catch them on a bad night because, you know, they don't care as much about this game. I think we could win that game.
Maybe it's a trap game because they play the Bucks in an hour from when we're recording, and then they play the Celtics the next day after they play us. So maybe call it a trap game.
All right, let's do it. we got Minnesota on Thursday.
There's your Robert Covington guy that you like.
There we go. I think Sarge is out. He was the other person in that trade as well.
Yeah. Right? Is he out? He's been playing well for them for the most part. No. Covington's out, actually. Sarge is still playing.
Okay. Again, I think this is, again, about desire. Like, they certainly have talent, but it's not three-point talent. This is kind of that same thing, that their offense starts with Karl Anthony Towns. And, you know, if you can control the rest of that team and let Cat get his numbers, you can win that game.
I have no idea what we're going to do with Cat, though. Because he's too quick on the perimeter for our regular centers, for Biz or Billy. And I think he could bully Frank, or if we go small and have Marvin guard him, I think he could bully them inside. I have no idea how he's not going to get 40 against us unless we catch him on an off-shooting night, which he doesn't really have many of.
And that's fine, though. If I'm JB, I'm like, all right, we're conceding that we're not allowing him to hit three-pointers like he does sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I know that's we're trying to find solutions, right? Yeah. So you got to think about it like Bradley Beal. Like, we're going to let him get his. We're going to let him eat, and we're going to control the rest of the team. Because you're right. Bismack Biyombo and Karl Anthony Towns basically play two different sports.
Yes. They're total opposite people.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then I guess he's really all they have, because Andrew Wiggins is a bad basketball player. Derrick Rose, I guess, is their second best player right now. Am I wrong?
Yeah, which is amazing to see.
I know.
I'm happy for him. I know he's gone through struggles and he's made mistakes in his life as well. But I love seeing, mm-hmm. you know, someone who is so emotionally attached to basketball do mm-hmm. really well in a place that people had dismissed him. You know, a former MVP had been dismissed.
Yeah, as a basketball player, it's a good basketball story, like, to really kind of reclaim his career when it looked like he was just going to flame out.
All right, so go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, just say now he's up to 18 points a game and is arguably the second best player on his team.
What, do you have his three-point percentage up?
37%. I actually just looked at that as you asked me.
That is, for his history, that's amazing that he is 30% from the three-point line. 37% from the three-point line.
Especially how he shoots, too, because he shoots the flattest jump shot I've ever seen from a guard.
What I was going to say, that we're in the middle of the third quarter. We got 5 minutes left, and we're on a 7-0 scoring run. We're up by 4 points.
Yeah, Kimba's starting to percolate a little bit. He missed that three, but he's hit a couple jump shots and forced a timeout, and that's not good. If Deion Waiters is going to hit shots like that.
Old Deion Waiters.
Doesn't he have a funny nickname? I feel like he's got a funny nickname. I don't know. I thought he had a funny one.
Waiters Island is always what I always hear. Because people who love Deion Waiters think that he can be more than he's ever been, and I just don't think it's ever going to happen.
Here it is. This is so on Basketball Reference. Oh, there he goes. Downhill Deion, nah. Google me, no. Headache, no. But this is the good one. Kobe Wade.
Kobe Wade?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I see it. He plays like he thinks he's Kobe Wade.
Okay. I was going to say, does his mom call him that?
Well, I can see he plays with that approach. Like, you know, he thinks he's Kobe Wade.
Yeah.
He had a good season a couple years ago before he got hurt. But yeah, other than that, it's an appropriate nickname for his approach, and not so much his actual abilities.
You know what's funny is that we could do like a Kobe Wade All-Stars. There are players who play like Kobe and Wade. Austin Rivers comes automatically to mind. He's done better.
Dwayne Bacon played like that for a while. Like that was my complaint with Dwayne Bacon, is that he played like that when he would get minutes. He would disappear, but when he would get the ball, like, he'd have stretches where he'd be like, all right, this is my time, and he'd just shoot six straight mid-range jump shots off the dribble and make
one of them. Told me he played like that with the Swarm, right? High PR.
I didn't watch him with the Swarm.
Okay.
But he took a ton of shots, which I'm sure they tell him to do that when they're sitting down there for assignment. But yeah, he took a ton of shots and shot percent from the field.
Yeah, when you told me that you had noticed that he played like that, I was like, man, is Jonathan watching Swarm games? And if he is, wow, God bless him. That is
I tell myself I'm going to watch Swarm games, but I never do.
The reason that we concentrated on Philadelphia and Minnesota is because Saturday and Sunday, back-to-back, we have the two, three best teams in the East in Boston and Toronto.
Well, Boston's, like, they're the 5 seed right now. I don't know what's wrong with them.
I still think that with their talent in the playoffs, mm-hmm. they could go far. You got to believe that there's with Kyrie and with Horford, who have been in the playoffs before, they can take their team. It'll be interesting to see when they come into Charlotte, if it'll be a game. This late in the season, I wonder if maybe we'll see Kyrie take a game off. Something like that. But that's the March 23rd Saturday game is the classic night where they're doing the NBA Jam t-shirts.
The last one of the season. Yeah. So we beat the Celtics at home already, but the Celtics absolutely housed the Hornets in the two games in Boston. So what do you think of the chances for the Hornets in that game?
I'm not counting on that game, to be honest with you. So I think it's going to go Philadelphia and Minnesota. I think we can pull out wins there. And then I think we're going to lose to Boston and Toronto. So that's
two and two.
We were talking about the two and two. We were talking about the hard schedule going forward. What do you think for next week?
Yeah, I think two and two's got to be the realistic goal. I think ideally you win all the home games. I'd be shocked if we beat Toronto in Toronto. Like we looked like. Like you said, Biz and Cat play different sports. We looked like a team that plays a different sport than the Raptors in the first game against them this year. And I don't know what's happened.
Yeah, talk about a home crowd, too.
Yeah, I don't know anything that's changed to make that go any better the next time.
There hasn't been anything. In fact, I think they've gotten healthier. I think Fred Van Fleet pronounced that name for me. How do you pronounce it?
It's just Van Vliet. Yeah.
He's coming off of injury now, so the bench mob is back.
They have Marc Gasol now.
Yeah, I don't think that's. Yeah, they stole Marc Gasol from us.
And Serge Ibaka will be back, I think, after his suspension for brutally assaulting Marquese Chris.
That was horrible.
I know.
Looked like the Malice in the Palace over there.
Marquese Chris, I don't know how you suspend him for a game. For that, like, I don't know what else he's supposed to do. Like, Serge Ibaka just came up from behind him and put him in a chokehold. What's he supposed to do?
He got suspended for getting owned. You don't get owned that much.
Well, I don't even blame him for that because it was like a sucker chokehold. Like, Serge Ibaka came up from behind and grabbed him by the neck and like threw him into the stanchion. Like, I don't know how Marquese Chris is supposed to defend himself from that.
It was crazy, but we got a rough road ahead.
Oh yikes! Michael Kidd-Gilchrist.
Oh wow.
I don't know if he did the side of the backboard on a 10-foot jump shot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say anything really bad about MKG because we know this is the same story over and over again.
Yeah.
He's gotten a bunch of minutes in the past couple of games when he had disappeared for a while, and I wonder what the thinking is behind that, probably because of the injuries, you know?
Yeah, and to be fair, and this is a little mean, but he still has kind of disappeared. Like, I've normally, like, at the beginning of the year, and the normal story with MKG is even though he can't shoot and he's not a great offensive player, he makes his presence felt with effort and rebounding and energy and stuff, and he just has been invisible when he's been back in the rotation.
Yeah, that sounds like you're talking about one of the kids that you coach in basketball. It's like, yeah. You know, he can't shoot the ball very well, but he's got so much energy. And we just love him on the team. He's just a great force of positivity on the team. Like, great, man. You're making millions of dollars. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, there's value in that. Like, everybody likes to play on a team with a guy that, like, you know, he's going to cover up mistakes for people on defense, and he's always going to give max effort and stuff. And he knows his limitations with the ball. But
If the Cavaliers going for a championship, it's nice to have Kendrick Perkins sitting on the bench so he can talk to you in the locker room. When you're the Hornets and you need every minute from every player, like, I don't know. I ain't got no time for that. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So
one more thing I wanted to say about the Heat game before we go. I know you got to go. Yeah. This is the last Dwayne Wade game. This is the last time the Hornets will play Dwayne Wade. Ooh. Probably. Jeez. Wow.
He's bouncy.
Yeah. And I wanted to say that I've loved watching Dwayne Wade beat the Hornets forever. Like, I remember it's etched in my mind that, look, we were up 3-2 in the playoff series against the Heat. And this guy, I don't know if you know more about this guy than I do.
No, it's the purple shirt guy.
Yeah, the purple shirt with the headband on, screaming at Dwayne Wade. We were going to win a playoff series. And, you know, you can't blame Spike Lee for Reggie Miller. But I'm blaming that guy for Dwayne Wade.
I don't know why. Heckling, I feel like, never goes the way it's supposed to. Like, these are professional athletes. Like, they don't They don't wilt when some random guy in the crowd tells them, like, hey, you're not good at basketball. Like,
no, they're going after.
That's going to have
your team than you. Shout out Russell or
Westbrook. Yeah, they're not. Like, that's only going to, you know, give them an extra little boost. You know, like, they're the best basketball players in the world. They're not going to be intimidated by your trash talk.
No.
So we're about to, the third quarter is about to wrap up. Jimmy Lamb just made a nice dunk. And looks like the Hornets are going to be trailing going into the fourth quarter against the Heat.
But I've got all the faith in the world, Jonathan.
Yes, this is a team, if nothing else, they've given us reason to believe in their fourth quarter. It's 62-60. This is not 2019 basketball.
It's like 90s basketball, Eric Collins.
It's 90s basketball if everybody took their jump shots from 8 feet further back.
Yeah, exactly.
And real quick, I have one more on the 90s basketball thing. Have you watched any like ESPN Classic or NBA TV like throwback games from the 90s recently?
Not recently, but I have in my past, yeah.
Without, like, if you remove nostalgia from the equation, which I'm 27 years old, so I don't really have much nostalgia because I wasn't old enough to really comprehend what I was watching.
Right.
That's some bad basketball relative to what's being played today.
Yeah, and it was a different game. It just wasn't.
Yeah.
It was a lot of one-on-one. It wasn't a lot of moving the ball around. When D'Antoni came in with the Suns and was doing the 7 seconds or less thing, yeah, that revolutionized the game because of how quick they played. It used to be put your bruisers down low, you know, Twin Towers with the Houston Rockets. And the stats, now everybody's concerned with what is the best percentage shot to take on what play.
I remember I turned on a game one time and it was an NBA Finals game between the Blazers and the Bulls. And in the first like minute and a half that I watched, Clyde Drexler, Hall of Famer Clyde Drexler, caught a pass on the wing at the 3-point line, wide open. Nobody was even, everybody was just kind of like, oh, well, he's got that shot. No point in trying. And he took a dribble up to the top of the key and shot a contested jump shot. I was like, I know this is before like analytics and stuff, but you have to think somebody was like, hey, if we're going to shoot from this far away, we might as well try to get extra.
Yeah, and I've heard it described as putting wheels on luggage. Like, why did it take so long? You know?
Yeah. But I got to go.
That's cool. The worst thing about 90s basketball is standard definition. That's the worst thing.
Oh, that's that too. But yeah, and it's also, yeah. But anyway, last thing before I have to go. The Magic are apparently signing Michael Carter Williams to a 10-day contract.
Oh, you love this, don't you?
Steve Clifford loves him some Michael Carter Williams.
I don't know why either.
Michael Carter Williams has a highlight reel on YouTube of him missing layups and airballing jump shots.
Is that I was going to say, is that 18 seconds long?
No, it's a good like 3 minutes long.
Oh my god.
And I don't even think it was from the full season. Like I think it was an At the Hive user put it together. His name's like 123-12-GO or 123, something like that. He put it together, and I think it was in like February or March. Like it wasn't even like there was still a couple months of the season left, and it's just like here's a 3 minute montage of airball jump shots and layups hit all backboard. But I don't know. I guess
is allegedly the sum and total of the MCW talk that will be on this podcast. Jonathan, thank you so much for your time. I know you got to go. Are you going to the finals game?
Yeah, I have, like, what do you mean the finals? Like, for my league? You there? You there, Zach? All right. Well, if Zach is gone, thank you guys for listening. We'll talk to you all next week, and see you later.